Hello, I'm Brian.
I'm Caroline.
I'm Claire.
And this is the Computer Weekly
Downtime Upload
Podcast.
And I'm back.
Yay!
Sorry, I wasn't around last week. Listen to last week's podcast.
What did you think?
Very entertaining. big thank you due to Ryan, who covered for me at very short notice. Interesting to hear about his ship.
Yeah.
Identification app. And you with the Sphinx. Yeah, that was a good episode. It's very entertaining. Liked it very much. Okay, top line on this week's podcast. We're going to be talking first and foremost about our very own diversity and inclusion event.
Yeah, so it's something that takes up a lot of my time and I always get really stressed about it. But then when it happens, I'm just really, really pleased. So this year we were talking about how properly implementing inclusive cultures in workplaces can lead to better diversity in the tech sector and make it like the best possible place to work. So that was the main topic. We covered a load of stuff. It was really interesting, and it got quite a lot of good feedback on social media, especially the part where we announced the top 50 women in UK tech. That's always really popular. Lots and lots of tweeting went on. So yeah, I think it went well.
Well, a massive well done for masterminding it, shepherding it through.
Yeah, I slept 13 hours yesterday because I just crashed out after.
Yeah. You must have a contacts book to die for.
Oh, well.
From this event.
Well, I'm sure I'll have to know.
Also this week, Caroline and I are going to focus on Oracle a bit. The reason why I wasn't around last week was I was flying back from San Francisco, where I'd been at Oracle Open World, but I'm not the only person who writes about Big Bad Red.
Yeah.
Is that what we call it?
Well, they're a little bit...
They're pretty hard-nosed, yeah, it's fair to say.
And they do have...
Harsh but fair.
There are some allegations that there is maybe a little bit of shadiness going on, which we'll cover off in a bit, but yeah, I'm always a little bit suspicious. Yeah.
We're going to turn our attention to government IT... A little bit, which I have to say does seem a bit incidental to the high drama in the House of Commons this week. It's been utterly brutal. Anyway, let's park that and return to something a bit more edifying. The event, Claire.
Women.
Who won?
Yeah, so the winner of this year's title, the most influential woman in UK tech, was Debbie Forster. She's the CEO of the Tech Talent Charter. It's basically a mission to connect up all of the points when it comes to, like, points in the industry when it comes to diversity and inclusion. So it's sort of connecting people who want work, people who train talent, people who try and increase the amount of diversity in the UK, and companies that need talent as well. So she sees it as sort of like a connecting the dots initiative. She sort of says, you know, we have all of the solutions out there, they're disparate, we need to make sure that everyone knows about everyone else and just push the agenda as much as we can to increase the number of diverse hires in tech.
How long has she been doing this?
So she became the official CEO in 2017. Before that, she was the co-founder and management group lead. Oh, management group member, sorry, not the management group lead.
Did she give a speech?
She did. She did. And the speech will be published on Computer Weekly once it's been edited by me, along with all of the other videos. Yeah, actually, her speech made me cry a little bit, which isn't hard to do, to be honest. I'll fall at anything. But she was basically saying, you know, like, don't ever let anyone tell you that there's not a place for you in the tech industry. And when I interviewed her, she was basically saying, you know, the conversation's moved on so much. 10 years ago, you couldn't even convince firms that there was no women in tech, let alone, you know, like, now talking about creating an inclusive workplace and making sure that it's built, like, an industry built for everyone. So
yeah.
It was so interesting, but I'm still a bit exhausted. I think it'll take me about four, like, I'll sleep all weekend and recover,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, you maybe not had time to process it totally, yeah.
It was
quite overwhelming.
Yeah, I had a really good turnout, and there were loads of topics discussed. So we had three workshops, one of them about catering to autistic talent. And I think when you're prepared to think about how specific groups of employees might need, you know, like, different types of things, you're more open to thinking about, well, how can then we then cater to making sure that everyone can feel safe in the workplace and make sure that they can do their best. And we had another workshop about whether technology is actually built to be accessible as well.
Okay.
Which was quite interesting. And then another which was sort of like a convo gathering session about returners to work and making sure that, like, we're just sort of like gleaning information from lots of different people about how can we make sure that it's easy for people, anybody that's had a career break, to then come back to the sector as well. There was a panel on mental health in the workplace, which I thought was really important. My panel was about inclusive culture and just how can firms take that first step, because I get that there's sort of like a lot of, there can be a lot of fear about, okay, we don't want to get it wrong,
yeah,
so we just won't do anything.
Yeah.
We don't want to be diverse-ish. I posed the question whether or not it's important to have, you know, like, for example, a women in tech network. Is it important to have a women in tech network, or does that divide people further? Mm. Obviously, just having a women in tech network doesn't fix it,
yeah,
you know, mm-hmm, but it does make it easier for people who do feel like they're in that category. It was a really interesting day. So much to be discussed.
Yeah.
I'm still...
I feel like you're going to be sat at your desk next week going, oh my God, that was such a good point.
Yeah.
Claire, the event was 2 weeks ago. Like, chill.
Everyone knows I'm a bit of a slow burn as well. Someone will ask me a question. I'm like, let me consider that 4 hours later. Actually, no.
It's all moved on.
Yeah.
And one of the things that struck me about the list was so many kind of diverse roles for women.
Mm.
For those, you know, not just, I mean, there were quite a few who were like traditional CIOs.
Mm-hmm.
So Sarah Windmill,
mm-hmm,
CIO of the British Transport Police, Anne-Marie Neatham, COO at Ocado.
Ocado Tech,
but
yeah,
there was a lot of real diversity in terms of VCs, angel investors, startup.
Mm-hmm.
Folk, kind of entrepreneurs, you know, as a real, you know, looking at the profession or looking at the possibilities from the outside, you know, you can see there's a real breadth there.
Mm. Yeah, I think that was part of the point of where we want to take the list as well, is
yeah,
that we've always said it's about making role models in the industry more visible and accessible. And obviously part of that is the different types of roles. Like, you're not just a software engineer anymore. It's not just, you know, like, software engineer, product manager, CIO.
Yeah.
There's so much more. There's so much, like, breadth and depth.
Fluidity as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not just... It's not the same. It's ever evolving. And especially with, like, all, like, you two will know about this. You know, different types of technologies.
Mm.
You know, like, cloud and automation and AI and data.
Yeah,
there's so much different stuff
yeah,
going on now. So you've
yeah,
got loads of different types of things you can do. It's exciting.
Mm. Mm.
I feel people need to know about it.
Yeah,
yeah, and I know it's in the rising stars category
yeah,
that you have Devin Edwards-Joseph, who's a data engineer. I've got to get this right. Machine intelligence program at Lloyds Banking Group. I mean, there's someone who we can maybe look to contribute to our understanding of data analytics and machine learning and
yeah,
so on, yeah. And there's a Hall of Fame as well, of course.
Yeah, so yeah, people have made a lifetime contribution to the tech sector. People like Dame Stephanie Shirley, or Steve,
yeah,
rather, sorry.
And Wendy Hall's in there.
Wendy Hall,
yeah,
and all of the past winners as well.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so we had a couple of new entrants this year to that. One of them being last year's winner, Amalie D'Awis. Also, Catherine Parsons from Decoded. We had Max and Karen from Every Woman. Kate Russell from BBC Click.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and obviously Maggie Berry. So she's been a judge of the list since it started, so she's never been on the list.
Oh. Tell us a bit about her.
So Maggie set up the Women in Tech Network. It was called Women in Technology. She set it up ages and ages and ages ago. And basically, I think as Brian described it, when we were announcing it, there was a point where she was the women in tech community, you know, like just joining everyone up, connecting
yeah,
everyone together. And it just so happened that this year when we did our first judging round, she couldn't join the session for some reason. So we got to have a conversation about her and then, yeah, put her on the Hall of Fame then.
Yeah, that's Brian Glick, our editor-in-chief,
yes,
of course. Mm, yeah.
Just to clarify, yes.
Yeah.
Because it's quite interesting, so obviously you have lots of different initiatives around diversity and inclusion. And do you see, from your sort of your viewpoint as someone who like monitors all of this, that having, you know, maybe with these joined up conversations happening, are you seeing that having a difference? You know, people, rather than have pockets of stuff going on and no one talking to each other, and maybe little wins happening here and there, do you see it making a difference that these things are happening, like becoming more joined up now?
Yeah, I think I do. I think a lot of other, you know, like lists and initiatives are willing to recognise each other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so for example, this year I got in touch with the Makers Academy and Accelerate Her, who both have their own lists, mm-hmm. and I worked with them to add some of the people that they'd considered before onto our nominations list to make it like bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Mentioned them at the event and in the pieces as well. Because there's no point in making it like loads of siloed things.
Yeah, or just being like, oh, this is our thing. We don't, you know, want to keep it a Computer Weekly only thing or whatever, you know.
Working together is better, always better,
mm-hmm.
than, you know, like being all exclusive, especially when you're trying to change things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How are you going to change it if then you're like, oh yeah, but like,
oh, we want to be inclusive, yeah. but you're not welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was at the Welcome Trust.
Yeah, you're all very welcome at the Welcome Trust.
Welcome at the Welcome Trust.
Cool. And are you starting to gear up for next year?
Yeah. So I think Mortimer Spinks, who are the recruitment firm who we, you know, like work on the event with, I think we're going to have a meeting soon and talk about the next year immediately. It needs to be,
a retrospective.
Yeah, mm-hmm. pretty much, you know, like I get a couple of months off up until Christmas and then it's thinking about the next one again.
Yeah.
And it's best to do that kind of thing quite quickly, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
After action review, I think the army call it.
Is that what they call it? Yeah, we're going to do one of them.
Excellent. Well, from diversity to, as we said, very hard-nosed supplier, Oracle. I was at Oracle Open World last week. Seems like a long time ago. So what to say about it? I suppose autonomy is a big theme for Oracle last few years. A few years ago, they introduced this autonomous database, the world's first revolutionary autonomous database, which is a database that magically heals itself and basically evacuates human error.
I was going to say, what about the database admins of the world? They were crying. What about my job?
Come on to this, because a big theme of Larry Ellison's first keynote was going even more autonomous, the fully autonomous cloud, and what they've done, and don't ask me how they've done this, but they've got a version of Linux that's now the underlying operating system, which is also autonomous.
Mm-hmm.
I've been working on this for many years. So they say, but the big picture thing is to eliminate human labour, take human labour out, so that you don't have data theft, because that's how you get things like data theft, is somebody somewhere making a mistake, failing to apply a patch, a vulnerability is therefore exploited, and so on and so forth. So that was the main theme of Larry's first keynote, where he had his habitual attack on AWS.
Yeah. Set your watch by it, usually.
boasting that by this time next year, Oracle will have more, you'll know much more about this, Caroline, than I do, but regions.
Yeah, data.
36 as opposed to Amazon's paltry 25.
Yeah, so it's basically sort of collections of data centres. So within each region, there will be like maybe a couple of or a few data centres. They never really specify how many.
Okay.
So then it's like, oh, we've got like a region in London, and that could be three or four data centres just for failover purposes and stuff. But that whole statement, his whole, this time next year, we'll have more data centres. I was just like, he's such like the Del Boy of like tech type, isn't he? He's just like,
we'll be millionaires.
Yeah, exactly.
But to be fair, he is a billionaire.
Yeah, I know, but it's always just
man
like
Silicon Valley.
He's just always with these like wheeling, you know, wheeling and dealing, ducking and diving sort of statements
he's
and
a,
stuff.
Yeah, he is a salesman.
I know, but I just, when I was reading your story and like I said, this time next year, it's just the first thing that came into my head was like him in a three wheeler, like driving around.
So Well, they were always saying by Christmas, weren't they? Or was it by next time?
Yeah.
Yeah, this time next year will be
millionaires.
Rodney.
Yeah.
So he did have his go at AWS, as is customary.
Mm-hmm.
In the second keynote, it was very much SAP he was having a go at. And his main theme there, and he has some justification for this, it has to be said, is SAP have rewritten their enterprise resource planning system, their mm-hmm. main thing, which is called S/4HANA. They've rewritten that for a database, for an in-memory columnar database called HANA, not for the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas right. we, Oracle, have rewritten our applications for the cloud. So thanks very much, SAP. You're such losers.
So he just decided to expand his list of people that he's going after.
His
this
list
year.
Of enemies. It's
not just, enough.
Yeah, it just gets longer and longer.
Yeah, he said there was lots of banks have switched from SAP to Oracle. Can't name them.
No.
Well, this but is, they have.
Well, that was the thing. What? It's like, oh, we've got, what was it? Was it 40,000 customers on Oracle Cloud? Or so, but there's no, you can't find anything else. That, I know he did call some out, like some, was it Chipotle? I was quite hungry and I was reading it.
That's the one that
Siemens,
stood out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's just, okay, but how much are they using? Like, is it just, and what do they count as, like, a user? They count someone who's just used it for a month and like, actually it's not for us. Like, you're a user, tick off. Like, there we go.
True, and it is obscure because they don't report their cloud numbers separately.
Because he's a Dell boy, that's why. So,
yeah. How many people do you think sit behind the scenes, PRs and lawyers, just waiting for damage control?
Yeah.
Or does
yeah.
he not care because he could just pay it all off? He's like, whatever, here's a million.
It's weird because they have this kind of thing of like you said, they changed their reporting of their how they do their financial results a couple of years ago. And it used to be that it used to break out into separate categories like revenue from SaaS, PaaS, and infrastructure as a service.
Mm.
Yeah, they do that, and then they'd also separate it out into a separate report
on-premise
licenses and services, wasn't it?
Oh, so now they've not done that.
Well, now they've kind of done it. Oh, well, actually, we lump in, I think it's cloud, basically cloud services revenue and on-premise services revenue. We report that in one chunk, and then cloud licensing revenue and on-premise licensing revenue. So you can't get a breakdown of like how much is cloud, how much, you know. So there's that, which I'm always like, Dell boy. But but no, there's been like things sort of dogging Oracle or accusations that maybe they do fudge the numbers a little bit. So yeah, there was a case in sort of, I think 2016, 2017 with this lady called Svetlana Blackburn, who was a kind of cloud finance manager at Oracle, and she sort of said, I was put under pressure to maybe add a few zeros here and there. And
a whistleblower.
Okay. Yeah, and got to say for the record that Oracle maintained at the time that all our cloud accounting is proper and correct.
Oh.
But they settled in principle with her, and we don't know the terms of that settlement, but that was just sort of like,
see what I mean?
That's gone away now.
Here's a million, shut your mouth.
And then there's this thing like Cliff wrote about this week, there's kind of under pressure to sort of substantiate their numbers a bit more as well from some legal action happening, which started about March time, I think, with Union Asset Management Holdings, who sort of launched a class action lawsuit against them for potentially improper tactics and falsifying sort of sales of their cloud products and stuff. But that's still ongoing at the moment, but I'm pretty sure the official line from Oracle again would be all proper. Our cloud accounting is proper and correct.
Proper and correct.
But there's just stuff like that. It's just a bit like, come on, Larry, what's going on?
But they do have a lot of engineers who are working on Oracle Cloud infrastructure.
Yeah. And they are getting deals, because we had the one I wrote this week about them getting the renewal of their MOU with the UK government for Oracle Cloud and stuff. And that's another 3-year deal, which apparently is going to make it easier for public sector organisations to access Oracle Cloud and the full range of services, go fully autonomous everywhere, wherever they want, whatever you were saying. So they are winning some deals, but yeah, it's just trying to get to the bottom of that.
Yeah, and HMG is a long-standing customer.
Yeah.
Oracle. Yeah.
Yeah, even which is, it's interesting in itself, because for years the rhetoric around government IT has been, we want to get rid of these or get out of these big legacy, long legacy IT contracts.
That was the Francis Maud thing originally.
And they he did some kind of initiative years ago when he was around.
Do you know, we had some input into that as Weekly Weekly, yeah.
One where he renegotiated the
Oracle Tony contracts. Collins was quite close to some of those Tories before they assumed government, and he advised some of them.
Ex-Computer Weekly.
Oh, is that who Tony Collins is? Yeah. I was a bit confused. I'd not heard that name before, and I thought that I had missed something. Tony Collins, ex-Computer Weekly.
Yes.
Okay. But no, the Francis Moore thing, he did renegotiate like quite a sizable Oracle contract, so it was still in place, but it was to sort of just cut the licensing costs and stuff like that. So I think this deal that was announced this week is almost like a carry-on of that, and just making sure public sector organisations can get continued access to the Oracle products and services.
Is this a Cabinet Office?
It's Crown Commercial Service, so government procurement chiefs, and yeah, the Cabinet Office will be involved, but it's for the whole entire public sector.
Right.
So legacy IT remains in government forever, and the big boys still have a foothold, so that's what we have.
I always liked the term monolithic when it comes to legacy contracts. It would be like monolithic legacy contracts.
Yeah.
Go on forever.
Yeah,
you need one of those kind of voiceovers.
Yeah. I like the oligopoly phrase. It's just four people like getting everything. Oh,
love it.
Yeah. Of course,
Del Boy was very emotional at times, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And Larry was very emotional on stage. He took a little time in his first keynote to say how much he was missing Mark Hurd. The way they divide things up is Larry is officially CTO and then Safra Katz, who looks after the numbers, is finance, but she's co-CEO, and Mark Hurd is also co-CEO, and he's really the application side of the business, and he's got health issues and is being treated. Larry was quite tearful on stage. And very tearful too about, not very tearful, but a bit tearful about Steve Jobs.
Mm. Well.
Who was his big pal.
The humanity element is there.
I suppose, how long did Mark Hurd work at Oracle anyway? But, you work side by side with people for a long time. You're not going to just be like, well, he's ill, bye. You work side by side.
No, you're such a cynic.
No, no.
Everyone, we were all in tears.
No, that's what I'm saying. You don't
want to be like BGB, bye, girl, bye.
Yeah. Like if you work, and obviously I'm guessing it's high pressure environment, everything, the people you work with probably spend long hours with and stuff like that. Exactly. It would affect you. I was appreciating it.
We've worked together for a long time, we're all friends. I'd be sad if you guys just suddenly didn't work at Computer Weekly anymore.
Yeah, same. Honestly, I don't know why I'm laughing.
But Mark Hurd will be coming back.
Yes, good.
We hope.
Yeah, we do hope. Mm.
In the meantime, effectively the kind of public face for the application side of the business is a chap called Steve Miranda, who I understand was one of Thomas Kurian's
lieutenants. Google boy.
Who's gone to Google, but Steve hasn't. He's still at Oracle. And I had some one-to-one time with him, which I've written up, a piece on the website. Not to go into all the detail of that, but I basically asked them, well, what's the benefit of cloud applications, not the infrastructure, but applications for, like, our readers? What can they do they couldn't do before? And his big message was speed. It's just faster.
Okay.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to do things.
But then, wouldn't one of the downsides...
Agility, flexibility, speed.
Yeah, but the downside is, like, connectivity, right?
So it's going to be it should be faster in theory, but if it's in the cloud and your network's a bit rubbish.
Or if you don't have access, internet access, what do you do? Nothing. No work today.
Yeah,
but if you really have to adapt your business model, you want to get things quickly.
Yeah. But then does that,
And look what's happened to Thomas Cook.
Wow.
Yeah.
Does that hamper the ability to remote work or flexible work?
I suppose it depends. If you're remote, you should be upwardly mobile enough to go somewhere with a better network, whether that's a Costa or a...
We're worrying about cloud, aren't we?
Yeah, we just...
Target.
I just finished my migration to Office 365 before we came into the podcast.
You're the only person
that's the only person brave enough. I was like, I'm going to give it a go.
Well, you know about this stuff, so you have faith in it.
Yeah, I've got the fear.
My thinking on it was just that I was like, well, if it take, we'll be in here for an hour, so if it needs time, it can just do it.
Mm.
And then Friday afternoon, I haven't got any interviews or anything booked. So I was like, if it all goes wrong, I've got time, hopefully, to sort it out, rather than like, right, I'll try and squeeze it in between this, this, and this.
Yeah, fair enough. And it was strategic. It was a strategic decision.
When I was like, I'm going to click on install, I'm going to get started. And I was like, has anyone else started it? And Alex Alex was like, no, I'm going on a trip next week. I want everything the same as it's always been until I get back. I was like, oh. And then a few others were like, oh, I'll probably not go to it today. I'm a bit scared. I was like, oh, shit.
Well, I might try it this afternoon.
Yeah, give it a go.
Yeah.
Change your life.
Probably in tears by home time.
It was very easy. I will be the managed service provider for the Office 365 deployment in editorial. I can help.
Sweet.
Yeah. 365, 24/7. I'll help you out.
Okay. So circling back to government. Speaking of government, whatever happened to the GDS, Caroline?
Oh, it used to be something I wrote about all the time. I remember it being really exciting. Is it not a thing anymore?
No, well, Brian...
It's evolving.
Yeah, Brian Glick, our auspicious leader, went to the Sprint 19 conference last week. And it's, like, GDS, did you say it was really exciting? And
at the time, when I was writing about it.
When was that?
2015?
Okay, so yeah, so they sort of...
That's quite old now, GDS.
Yeah, so it's been, they're saying that they're in the third era now. And the first one was them, like, I get this image when I read about GDS, but they're like this kind of upstarty child that goes marching into departments, like, right, everything we do is wrong, and we're going to change it, and people, and I think, so they were kind of a disruptive force in the beginning.
Like they were, problems. You talk about the government as a service plan, you know.
And then it turns out when you go into people's departments and you start telling them everything that the way they work is wrong and they're doing everything wrong and they know a better way, people tend to just go, okay, thank you for coming, pushing you out the door, and we're going to go back to doing everything we've always done the way we've always done it. So there's been kind of criticisms that, you know, maybe they haven't achieved as much. Yeah, all the promise that they said they were going to do hasn't quite come to fruition. So there was this House of Commons Science and Tech Committee meeting earlier this year, July 2019, where they sort of said, oh, you know, the GDS is losing authority, it's losing momentum, they're just not achieving what they set out to. So at Sprint 2019, it sounds very much like they kind of came out like, right, okay, we've got to prove this committee wrong, you know, we are making progress, and they sort of set out their kind of agenda for like, this is what we're going to do next, this is how the third era of GDS is going to be. But I think, yeah, in Brian's reporting, he sort of pointed out that GDS has more members of staff than some of the departments they're even trying to help. So it's kind of this huge department. What are they actually doing? What are they actually achieving? And
they're trying to convince all of the other departments that it's something they need.
Yeah. And it's just, it's kind of trying to, I guess, get a sense of how much are they actually achieving and stuff like that. And at the conference, the new interim leader of
She's interim.
Yeah.
Okay.
Alison Pritchard, I think her name is. She sort of was kind of set. She sort of said, "Oh, you know, the agenda for them now is to they want to establish digital as a function across government."
All right.
Whatever that means.
Cool.
And she was saying, and also sort of make more collaboration from a tech perspective between departments. But she was saying, you know, what's really helping all that out at the moment?
Is it
Brexit? Can it be,
an upside to Brexit?
She's saying it's all this process is being
Brexit.
Yes, it's all being buoyed by Brexit and acceleration because this is leading to barriers between departments breaking down. I think because probably the people in the departments are breaking down and they need the support of other people to get through Brexit. So, so that's going... So that's what she was sort of talking about. And then she said, oh, we've got five pillars of work we're going to be focusing on. And then that by 2030, they would make great progress on these five areas, which seems like quite a long time in tech to say.
That's 11 years. What are they going to do?
I'm glad you asked. Some of them sound quite... Like, I've heard this before. They're going to tackle legacy IT.
Monolithic systems.
They're also going to tackle security. Systems are going to be safer, securer than ever before.
So they're not secure now?
Oh, no, they're secure, but they're going to be secure.
Even more secure.
Yeah.
Securerist.
They want to... One of them is they want to make a digital identity system, a single one, that everyone can use. But Brian sort of made the point, like, the big thing you would think they would talk about there is Verify.
Yeah.
And apparently at the start of the conference, they mentioned Verify, and they're, oh, we'll come on to that later. And Brian loves Verify, and you can just imagine him sitting there with his ears pricked up, ready to hear more, and they didn't mention another thing about it.
Did they not? Have you used it? I think I used it once and then never again.
This is interesting. You tried to use it.
No, I did. I did use it once, but it wasn't clear to me whether it's like a one-time use thing or if it's something that you can set up to use again.
Okay.
I might be talking a load of ball.
Well, you're a user.
Yeah,
but I'm also not sure what happened.
this is exactly the kind of feedback they... Because one of the things they would work on is user experience. So this is all great feedback they can use.
What happened?
Send this sound file to GDS and go, look, this is my problem, my specific problem using your services.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure if I did use it twice or not. I don't know if it's... What happened?
Don't know.
But then, neither do I.
But that's the other thing they want
to
make...
Which pillar are we up to now?
We are number five, which is make data more accessible, which is what you will do when you pass on your feedback to them, to all the departments.
Cool.
So it's, there's like user experience, make data more accessible. They want one digital identity kind of service to rule them all across government.
Cool.
Do more security.
Yeah.
Less tackle legacy IT. So that's the five pillars, and we'll be working on those from now to 2030. But again, it's just, I'd say 2030 is a long time away, and you just kind of think, well, are the benchmarks on any of this? Because I'd say some of this stuff is stuff that the government always says they're working on. And probably the real newsy bit in that would be if they said, oh, actually, we think we're done on security. We probably stand to be less secure. It's just all kind of stuff you just expect them to be working on, really.
But they are going to appoint a new chief data and information officer.
Yeah. At GDS?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, there's... You know, it's... You know, I think they're... I think the thing with GDS is like the intentions are good. You can see the point of what they're trying to do, but they're obviously coming up across people who don't want to change, which is the same with any kind of transformation within any business, which is part of it. But also as well, like I say, it's just the, can people really get their heads around it? Have the people in these departments, is there an attitude of, oh, here we go again with some of this? It's hard to know what's going on, really.
I think in defence of GDS, it's like, it's a massive undertaking when you think that not only do all of the government departments have their own systems that probably have things that could overlap if they wanted to, but then if you think of all of the different types of public service, like local councils, county councils, district councils, NHS, NHS trusts, which are all different, all of them have like built their own thing. And they all do different things, but some of the things are the same. If you looked at it as a project to undertake, I mean...
Yeah, it is.
No wonder it's going to take till 2020.
Yeah, it is, like I say, it's a huge thing of work they're trying to do and have been trying to do for years. But you don't really know what is... I don't know, part of it is, like, what are they... Like I say, what are they being benchmarked on? Is this just as good a amount of progress as they'd ever get, given the conditions they're working under? Or could they be doing more and... You know, accelerating things a lot faster and making change happen a lot faster. You don't know, like, say, I don't work in any of these departments. We talk to disgruntled people who do from time to time. So we'll see. Like I say, it's, you know, it's a new era for GDS, but obviously the proof of the pudding is always in the eating with these things. So we'll just have to see.
I suppose the big idea is to kind of break down silos across Whitehall and what's not to like.
Yeah. And that's how Brexit's doing.
And Brexit's moved that along. Yeah. So, hurrah for Brexit.
Yeah.
Well, sadly this week for us, Warwick Ashford, our esteemed security editor, has left the building. But we're hoping to get him back to talk as an analyst for Kuppinger Co., which is the firm he's gone to, Kuppinger Co. Warwick is a broadcast journalist, as we know by training, and he was pretty stellar when he did appear on the podcast. He has been replaced by Alex, who's also a podcast stalwart. As security editor, Alex will be on the podcast next week, telling us all about feeling his way into his new role. And maybe also the week after, where we might discuss the capture. This programme on the BBC.
It's better be good, Brian.
Yeah.
You're going to make me watch actual television.
I've oversold it now. I'm beginning to
How many episodes is it? Six.
Six.
So you want us to give up 6 hours of our life?
An hour?
Yeah.
BBC, no breaks.
Well, let's not commit ourselves completely.
That's a lot of attention,
but it's all about surveillance
okay.
and security, and it does look interesting. But it's
deep fakes, isn't it? A bit of deep
fakes. Yeah, mm-hmm. bit of deep fakery. Yeah, right. Yeah. But for this week, that's all we've got time for, alas. So thanks, Caroline.
You're
thank
welcome.
You to Claire. Anytime. And a big well done for the event.
Thank you.
And thank you to you, listener, for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.